He is our Sportsnet hockey insider. You see him on headlines every Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, and find his great work at sportsnet.ca. How's it going, CJ?
I am doing well, boys. How are you guys today?
Fantastic. Travis Green probably got the sour taste out of his mouth from the Nick Cousins goal that probably shouldn't have been a couple of nights ago against the Arizona Coyotes. Did he at least get a sorry from the league on that, CJ? Like, at least an apology, no?
It might not have been a full sorry, but I think it was certainly a recognition that his frustration wasn't misplaced, that there was even some inside the hockey operations department who wondered whether they made the right decision. I don't think that was unanimous by any stretch among that group, but you know, it was a tough call for them to have to make, and you know, it's not one that they hope to see repeated on a potentially even more important goal. But you know, as the league does in these sorts of cases, they reached out and spoke with Travis, let him know what they saw, what their decision making process was, and you know, he probably wasn't satisfied because it doesn't give you that goal back. It doesn't give you back potentially an extra point in the standings in this case, but if nothing else, they were transparent in how they arrived at that decision.
It's going to be great when the Canucks miss the playoffs by one single solitary point. And they can point.
No one will remember this then. This will never be raised again at that point.
Not in Vancouver. No, nothing like that has ever happened before. But curious, though, because on the play, Travis ends up challenging for goalie interference, which is clearly not the case. He hopes that they take a look and they see the kicking motion on the goal. Can you do that as a coach and still come out with the correct result? Like, are they allowed to then see it as a kicked in goal and reverse it for that reason rather than goaltender interference?
Yes, they can. And really any goal that's deemed to have potentially been kicked in can be reviewed, in the video room in Toronto. And you know, actually, I know for a fact that when that was called in as a potential goaltender interference, that you know, hockey ops recognized that wasn't truly the motivation of Travis Green. So when they were reviewing that play, they were looking for the distinct kicking motion. Obviously, those making the decision didn't think it was strong enough to overturn. But the way that played out could give you the result you want if you're the Canucks. It just didn't in this case.
You're listening to Reach Deep. We're joined by our Monday insider, Chris Johnston. Chris, let's talk a little bit about that trade deadline and the Vancouver Canucks. What are you hearing on the Canucks' plan ahead of the deadline?
Well, it seems like a lot of their energies are focused on the Alex Edgler situation now. And you know, in his case, clearly that's you know, likely going to result in a contract extension rather than movement at the deadline. But you know, I think that there's a recognition or understanding that you know, his situation has to be resolved one way or another by February 25th. And, I know coming out of their scouting meetings, that was their focus. So, you know, it's going to be interesting because, you know, when you look at the playoff race in the Western Conference, I mean, it looks like potentially a lower total than normal is going to take one or two of those wild card spots. And then so, you know, Vancouver might still find themselves in that race and might impact somewhat what they're thinking. But, at this stage, I don't get the sense that there's tons of, you know, specific discussion going on in terms of things that are close, but everyone's kind of looking internally and then looking around the league for fits. And you know, if the Canucks want to start trading some of their D, for example, you know, they're going to have no trouble making moves.
Chris Johnston, our guest, Sportsnet Hockey Insider. Find his work at sportsnet.ca. See him Saturday nights, hockey night in Canada, on headlines in the second intermission of the first slate of games. Now, you guys mentioned that it is a buyer's market right now, and for a team like the Canucks, I think that's an interesting spot, CJ, because they're a bit of a tweener team, but they're also, you know, still looking for players that can not maybe help them in the short term, but maybe there's opportunity for players that maybe do have term left on their deal that just aren't having a proper fit, something of that nature. Do you think there's going to be that market out there because of just how many, like, is there an opportunity here because of the way this market is shaping up as a buyer's market more so than a seller's one?
I think so. And you know, a lot of those names are out there in one form or another as well. I mean, it's no secret, you know, the types of guys that could move and, you know, with so many teams being, you know, committed sellers at this point or having assets that they're committed to selling. You know, I do think that there is opportunity. You know, my only concern, and I don't want to air this too much just because obviously we have a show to put there for 10 hours or whatever on the 25th, is that, you know, with so many players out there and you know, it being a buyer's market, that, you know, some teams might not be able to get the price they want for their guys and might just decide they're better to hang on to a player than to trade him for pennies on the dollar or what have you. And so, you know, there's definitely opportunity, because I do think that they're, it's more than just depending on restricted free agents. I mean, of course, those types of players will be moved. You know, guys like Wayne Simmons, very likely to be traded by Philadelphia before becoming a free agent on July 1st. But, you know, there's also some players, you know, in situations like in St. Louis, where they might consider moving players with term, you know, Braden Schenn, you know, Alex Pietrangelo's name we've talked about before. I mean, it's going to take a haul to get those kind of guys. But, you know, if you're a team that's looking for that opportunity, I do think it'll be out there. As I say, in the larger picture for the, you know, for the whole league, though, I'm almost a bit worried that there won't be enough buyers and that the prices won't be what the sellers need to see a slew of trades as we would hope for.
Yeah, in terms of a buyer's market, yeah, you have to have a bit of a return if you if you're a team that's looking at selling as well. On the other side of things, the Oilers seem to always be searching for another forward, somebody that can play with a Connor McDavid. New reports coming out that they're apparently willing to part with a first-round pick, young forward, or a goalie. What do you think happens in Edmonton here? Because it seems like, in terms of desperation, times are getting desperate again. Do you see them making a pretty big move?
They're certainly in the mindset that they want to do that. And, you know, it's a fascinating scenario. You have this team that's underachieved, that has arguably or maybe inarguably at this point the best player in the game. And you know, they simply can't miss the playoffs this year in terms of their organizational mandate. And so, you know, I think that's where this urgency comes from, is that, you know, they're among those teams, you know, like the Canucks, that are kind of in that mix for a wild card spot. And they recognize that, you know, after McDavid and Dreisaitl, they're not getting a whole lot of offensive production from their group. And you know, so what do they have to sell? They have guys like Jesse Puljujärvi. You have to wonder, you know, I think it's dangerous to trade on him, even though he hasn't maybe had to start to the NHL career as quick as you might like. But, you know, we've seen players like him, you know, go and you know, bloom elsewhere. You know, obviously that first-round pick, you know, Cam Talbot is in the last year of his deal. You know, it's a fascinating scenario in that I do think we will see trades from them and you know, perhaps sooner rather than later. I mean, they might, you know, there was another deal today, but they might get into the mix and get things started here even before the calendar turns over to February, because I think they recognize, you know, how perilous their position is in the standings. And so, yeah, I do think that Peter Shirelli is going to be very active, and, you know, it might be something, maybe not a full-on blockbuster, but, you know, it might be a bigger sort of trade than even we're accustomed to seeing at the deadline.
Chris, what kind of names do you think when you talk about maybe close to a blockbuster? Are we thinking maybe like a Mark Stone type or somebody of that name value?
Well, I think that they would be very interested. You know, at this point, my sense is that Ottawa hasn't yet committed, you know, to their plan, exactly what's going to happen with Matt Duchene and Mark Stone, you know, in terms of whether they might still be able to sign one or both of those guys, you know, but it's safe to say if they decided on one or both of them that they're not going to get an extension done, and that the best thing to do is to get some value back for them. I mean, that would have tremendous appeal for anyone looking for a forward, and you'd have to think Edmonton would be in that group. You know, they might be creative as well, you know, and try to get someone a little bit younger. I think when you're giving up potentially a prospect, and, you know, it's not to say Puljujärvi is definitely in this deal, but if you're open to trading someone like that, you can probably do so and target, you know, younger forwards, not someone who's a pending UFA. But, you know, I think that the message is clear that they're not saying no to anything right now. They're open for business, and they're open to whatever ideas come along. And you know, if we're looking for a place where we might get something exciting, I think Edmonton's probably a decent one to zero in on.
Yeah, it's wild, but you know, Taylor Hall or Jordan Eberle would look really great in an Oilers uniform these days. But
you couldn't resist.
Does it every time?
it needs to be said. You know, hey, we need scoring, and we traded away so much of it there in Edmonton, and I got to think, if you're Bob Nicholson or Daryl Cates, like, how much confidence do they have in Peter Chiarelli, like, you know, manning the board on a big move like this, CJ?
Well, I mean, I think at this time it's clear that sort of move would have to have organizational approval as well. And so, you know, Peter Chiarelli, like a lot of GMs, isn't acting totally on an island. You know, he's working in the context of his department. And, you know, I don't think that anything is happening in Edmonton that you know, Bob Nicholson or even potentially the owner, Daryl Cates, doesn't have some say in. And you know, it's a fair question. I mean, it's no secret that Peter Chiarelli's job is not completely secure at this time. I think, you know, the team has been, you know, pretty open about the fact that, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, rather, there's going to be some changes in the off season. And so in that context, you know, Peter Chiarelli in some ways is managing to, you know, to extend his run there in Edmonton. And so, you know, he's not making these trades alone, but, you know, I think part of the story of what's happening with that team is that there's a lot of pressure internally on Peter to make trades to make them better and get them over the hump, at least for this season.
You're listening to Reach Deeper, joined by Sportsnet's very own NHL insider, Chris Johnston. Chris, in the Pacific Division as well, the Anaheim Ducks are struggling, lost 11 straight, and Randy Carlyle got the dreaded vote of confidence. He's got it for now, but for how long? Is he still in a pretty, you know, a dicey situation here in terms of his job?
I would say yes. I mean, if they hit 15 games to pick a number out of, you know, at some point something's got to give. They got to win some games for Randy to keep his job. You know, the one thing that it works in his favor here is he works for a general manager in Bob Murray who really doesn't like in-season coaching changes. You know, he was stood by Randy when they had an 8-game losing streak earlier in the year. Rather unusual move last night to put out a statement in support of his coach after they lost their 11th in a row. You know, the key word in there, of course, is at this time, I'm not considering a coaching change. But, you know, it's clear they don't want to make that move, but it could happen. I don't think any coach, you can say 100% is secure. And you know, with how their season has turned, you know, I would put them in the group of teams that you know, organizationally feel as though they should make the playoffs. And so, you know, if this keeps spiraling, there's a scenario probably where Randy could be replaced. I mean, they have Dallas Eakins coaching the American Hockey League, their farm team in San Diego, you know, which to me looks like a natural in-season move if you ever make that decision. But, you know, they're an organization that doesn't want to make that change. I mean, that's obvious. Most GMs probably would have replaced the coach by now in this same situation. And the fact that the Ducks haven't, you know, is a testament to the fact they'd like to do things differently, but, you know, they also need some wins here.
Chris Johnston, our guest, the Ducks and Stars getting a trade done earlier today. Devin Shore going to the Ducks and Andrew Cogliano going to the Stars. And the Stars are a really interesting team, of course, as well, CJ, because of everything that happened a couple of weeks ago with Jim Leitz calling out Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. And then over the weekend, Coach Jim Montgomery getting frustrated, called it a culture of mediocrity. What exactly, how messy of a situation is it there in Dallas right now? And that could be another team where we see big changes ahead of the deadline.
Well, we could. And I think it's a sign of, you know, just how impatient ownership's feeling there. And you know, in the case of the Benn Seguin stuff that came directly from ownership, you know, in Jim Montgomery's comments, or head coach, I think it's, you know, an idea of the pressure he's under, that he feels as though that there is issues that they have to address. And you know, I guess in that sense, this trade makes some sense for Andrew Cogliano. You know, I think in the big picture, it's a tough deal for Dallas because they're acquiring a player who's 7 years older and who costs more, albeit, you know, in Andrew Cogliano's case, has a sterling reputation, you know, knowing as a true professional, still skates well enough, I think, to play the game. And so, you know, those attributes will help. But, you know, I think it's almost in direct retaliation isn't the right word, but there's a direct line to be drawn between what Jim Montgomery said after that loss on Saturday and the trade that's been made. And so, you know, it's a tough business. I think at the end of the day, we can't escape that fact. You know, there's at least a few teams around the league where we can kind of say similar things about where they really do feel as though they have to win. But, you know, the Stars are, you know, several years into Jim Neal's tenure there. You know, they have two of the higher paid forwards in the league, and, you know, they can't miss the playoffs again. It's that simple. And, you know, I think everyone's feeling the stress of all that as we move in here to the stretch drive of the season.
CJ, last one before we let you go. It's been a fun couple of days kind of debating Rick Nash's career. You know, you look by the numbers and the amount of games he played, he was certainly, he did well. But as a number one pick, I think there's many out there that that kind of come away with his NHL career feeling sort of underwhelmed because there wasn't, I guess, the ultimate success. And the years in Columbus never really was able to get that team out of the basement all that much. They played four playoff games with Rick Nash in a Blue Jackets uniform. How do you look back on his career with the high expectations and still putting out solid individual numbers, but maybe never reaching that apex that many put on him?
Well, you know, I see it a little bit as a missed opportunity to some degree, and that's a little unfair. I mean, the guy had 1,000 career games, 2 Olympic gold medals, 400 goals. You know, he had a darn fine career. But, you know, the fact it's ending now a little bit prematurely is part of that because, you know, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time a few times, and especially those first 8 or 9 seasons, you know, being in Columbus, you know, in a period before that Blue Jackets organization was anywhere close to winning anything. I think that, you know, it may have spoiled some of those years. You know, it probably didn't get the attention they deserved. They didn't have the support. Ideally, you'd like to have a player like that have. You know, he went to the Rangers and you know, got to that Stanley Cup final that they lost to the Kings in 2014 and went through a terrible goal drought in that playoff run. But, you know, with how he played for Team Canada and some best-on-best tournaments, you know, I still think of him as one of the very, very good players of his generation. Not, you know, obviously it cuts below the great ones that we might remember from that period in time. But, you know, he was a real fine gentleman and you know, played the game at a pretty high level, you know, winning Olympic gold medals and dominating world championships. It's just a shame we didn't get to see more of those games in the prime of his career in the NHL. You know, I think that he could have written a different legacy that way. But, you know, that's the way it goes. When we have 31 teams, unfortunately, they're not all going to be good. And, you know, I think Rick was in the wrong place at the wrong time when he had his best years.
He is a real fine gentleman as well. That being you, CJ, joining us here every Monday. Appreciate it as always, and we'll talk next week.
All right, boys. Thank you.
Sportsnet 650.